the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hello, welcome to the Women's Football Podcast. I'm Hamish, but unfortunately, my partner in crime, Kieran, is off packing for Sweden, but I feel as though I have found a suitable replacement. He is the current manager of Everton Ladies, who currently sit third in the WSL table. He has previously coached Team Great Britain to a bronze medal in the 2009 World University Games and served as Mo Marley's assistant at the Blues. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Andy Spence. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks, Hamish.
Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on to the podcast. Andy is one of four experts that we have gathered as we look ahead to the upcoming European Championships. Later, we will hear from the presenter of the FA Women's Super League show, Lindsay Hooper, BBC's Jackie Oatley, and the editor of She Kicks magazine, Jen O'Neill. But first, Andy, welcome to the show. We all know the squad. As a fellow manager, do you like the look of it in terms of the right balance and the depth of the squad that are going to the Euros for England?
Yeah, I think the squad has got a real good makeup to it. Of course, it's been well documented about, you know, a few injury doubts to players. But in terms of the depth of the squad, I think it's probably the strongest England have took into a tournament. And in terms of options within a tournament, that's what you always need to have. And I think England are in a good position in that sense that they've got a number of players who can play almost two or three positions, so it gives the squad that flexibility if injuries come into play during the tournament. It will open it up and give them real good options, as I say, whether it's defensively or attacking options. The squad's got a real good mixture for me in terms of the balance between, you know, the experienced players who've had lots of tournament experience now, but equally, you know, Hope's really brought in, you know, three or four excellent young players who have excelled at junior level in tournaments, and now we're going to give them their opportunity to experience a senior tournament. So I think, from my point of view, it is the strongest squad that England have gone into recent tournaments with. Obviously, you can't account for in the tournament what happens, but in terms of giving themselves a real good chance, then I think England will have a good amount of confidence.
There's obviously a couple of talking points. The lack of a natural left-footed centre-back is one of them. Is that really too much of an issue with, obviously, Steph Houghton making that position her own recently?
I don't think so. I think, ultimately, yeah, you know, in terms of absolute balance, it would be nice to have that left-footed centre-half. But, you know, the players that will play in those positions are certainly more than capable of playing off the left side when they need to. But, you know, I certainly more than, you know, tactically aware of taking up good positions so they don't get themselves caught out potentially on the weaker side, and obviously pick up good positions so they play off their strengths, which is probably with the, you know, say someone like Steph, obviously a right hand side, but, you know, we've been up against Steph a number of times. If it plays to a left hand side, she won't have any problems, and as I say, you know, they're small details, but ultimately I think, you know, England have got a real good group of defenders who've, during the qualifiers, have shown, you know, a real steely resolve. So I think they'll be going into the tournament wanting to continue that.
And obviously another talking point is taking a handful of injured players. But, you know, the likes of Kaz Kani and Casey Stoney look fine against Sweden.
Yeah, of course, you know, they're going to be a little bit rusty in the sense of, you know, game time and minutes. But I know, obviously, from a management in terms of their conditioning, the girls will have been looked after superbly through the staff. So I don't think there's huge concerns there. Of course, the Sweden game was ideal in terms of giving them, as I say, real competitive match minutes. But, you know, both the players you mentioned there, Casey and Karen, are both experienced players, so they know what it takes to play at this level. So they'll be able to cope with them, with the demands of the game, and I'm sure, you know, right the way through the tournament, it won't be an issue for England.
England, of course, had two warm-up games, a 1-1 draw with Japan, and then the 4-1 defeat to the host nation. Should we read too much into those games, or was it just about getting players' minutes and gelling them together?
I certainly think from the Japan game, you know, it looked as though Hope had selected what would almost pretty much be, you know, a mix of players who will come in and be starters, but obviously some players were still returning potentially from injury and training, so they hadn't fully been ready for that game. So in terms of the Japan game, some players got some valuable playing time, and then obviously the Sweden game, I think the starting 11 was pretty much what may well start against Spain in the first game, and then equally with that, obviously half time, and there was, you know, 5-6 changes to give again those girls who need that experience of playing against top opposition at a senior level, those experiences. So I think if you win the games, you think they're really useful and you know, and they're a fantastic experience. If you lose the games or draw the games, you look at it in the bigger picture kind of thing and go, well, actually, it's given the players some real good experience and, you know, given players returning from injury some playing time, and for those young players who are coming into the senior setup in terms of tournaments for the first time. So I actually think don't read too much into the results, because some of the other teams, I'm sure, we'll mention later on in the programme, you know, they've had some what we would think of as shock results, you know, France against Australia getting beat. But ultimately, the real business comes, obviously, the following week, and then that's when you can really measure how truly far those teams are prepared for the tournament.
As you say, we've got an idea of that starting 11. Let's have a little look at what we think it will be. It'll be Karen Barsley in goal, back four of Alex Scott on the right, Sophie Bradley, Casey Stoney, Steph Houghton. The anchoring two, Jill Scott, who obviously you know well, Anita Asante, who obviously plays in Sweden, three just behind Ellen White, the lone striker of Eni Aluko, Farrah Williams and Rachel Yankee. What sort of strengths does that team have?
Well, first of all, what jumps out is there's lots of experience. You know, you kind of, if we look at the back five, you know, obviously Karen Bardsley, hugely experienced in terms of maybe not major tournament football for England, but in terms of you know, experiences of playing different countries, etc., and playing the qualifying games. Then, you know, Karen's obviously established herself as number one recently. The back four speaks for itself. You know, Alex Scott is, you know, certainly one of the best fullbacks probably in Europe in terms of what she offers and has consistently delivered. You know, across a number of tournaments for England. The two centre-halves, well, obviously they have that relationship at club level as well, so that's obviously important to have that spine. And, you know, obviously Sophie Bradley's good young defender, she still is young, so obviously she's still, you know, kind of getting to grips with international football fully as well. But Sophie's a good out-and-out defender. Casey, obviously, as captain, brings huge amounts of experience and leadership. And then obviously Steph, a fullback, well, we spoke about, is she going to be potentially a problem in terms of not having the strongest left foot in the world? Well, absolutely not. I think the Olympics proven the fact that, you know, she was a top performer for GB as it was then, but, you know, Steph's a top quality player. So you look at that back five, as I say, the qualifiers, if you like, I think they've only conceded maybe two goals in the lead up to the finals, so that says to me that they've got a real good base to build from. Obviously then in front of them you've got Jill, and obviously Jill's again one of many experienced international players, and, you know, obviously working with Jill on a regular basis, I know what she brings to a team. She brings fantastic leadership qualities, which she's been developing obviously recently with ourselves, but she offers a lot of quality both in the defending and the attacking phases of the game. And, you know, Jill's always popped up with vital goals for England. I think, you know, she certainly scored one against France in the World Cup. She scored against Holland in 2009 to get England through to the quarters at the time. So she obviously offers a lot of good qualities. And then Anita Asante, well, probably Anita's one of the most underrated players for me. She might not be, you know, the player who gets it and beats five players, or she might not be the player who scores 35-yard strikes, but she's a player who, I bet if you'd asked any of the girls in the team what they wanted in the starting 11, they'd all say yes, because she brings a real solidity. You know, she's a clever player, she picks up the spaces, and the clever players who drop in between the lines, she picks up really well and defends, and is a real smart player in there for England. So, and she'll free up Jill to get forward as well, which is obviously important from an attacking point of view. And again, quality on the ball, lots of experience. then the front three in front of them, if you like. You work and, you know, you look at Eniola, you know, a fantastic threat in terms of a pace. He's always come up with goals as well, which is important because you need goals across the team. You can't just rely on one or two. Pace to burn, as I say. Again, she scored a decent goal the other night, and so she shows that she's going into the tournament with a, you know, sort of goal-scoring form, which is good for any attacking player to have that feeling. And, you know, it's certainly a good outlet for England. Certainly, if they're under pressure, they've got good pace in the wide areas to counter-attack on teams. You've got Farah, who's playing in the 10 position. You know, obviously, again, having worked with Farah for many years, her quality on the football is, you know, undoubted. You know, certainly one of the best technical players I've ever worked with. You know, a super player who can pick a pass, who can open up defences with either a clever little ball or a longer delivery. So he's a real good player to have in that position. And obviously the security with Anita and Jill behind her will allow Farah to keep joining in with Ellen and hopefully offer a goal threat as well. And of course, set plays, Farah's always a good deliverer of a ball and free kicks. Rachel Yankee doesn't need any more introduction from me, really.
Certainly not.
Obviously goes without saying, an absolute, you know, well, she is a legend of women's football, there's no doubt about that. A huge outlet for England, someone who you can rely on, someone who will beat players with a pace, but equally can play a clever pass. Again, saw that in the recent friendly games, the warm-up games. So Rachel's got fantastic quality, and again, is one who can always pop up with a goal. So a great option for England down the left-hand side. And then obviously number nine, Ellen. You know, again, a player who works absolutely tirelessly, and I think in the style and the way that England's set up, you need that number nine to be someone who's willing to be an absolute pest for the whole back four. And certainly Ellen's one of those players who doesn't give anyone a second's rest, always on the move, always on the go, so she'll cause a lot of problems through her sheer endeavour. And then obviously she's a goal scorer as well at the end.
I was going
to
say, she's got great technical ability to go with that.
Absolutely, you know, and people, and like I've just done, will talk about Ellen's sort of physiological strengths first of all, because that's what you see instantly. But you're right, you know, Ellen knows where the goal is. She scored against tournament goals in previous World Cups, etc. So she will be a good number nine for England, and someone who, you know, will spearhead that attack really well.
Obviously, from your point of view, looking at the squad as a whole, three Everton players in there, must be very pleased.
I'm delighted. You know, it's whenever the tournaments come around, you kind of, I think the girls are nervous. I'm probably nervous for them, because ultimately it's a fantastic honour, and I do believe if they come off a good tournament, then that will only enhance our second half of the season for us, you know. So, you know, in terms of the three girls being selected, obviously delighted for them. And, you know, all three will definitely add to the squad. Although, as we say, Jill's probably to be the one who's likely to start. You know, Rachel, in terms of her experience as a goalkeeper, well, again, needs a little from me to explain what she brings. But, you know, Rachel's got huge experience, and what she will also bring, which is fantastic for the group, is that she's an unbelievably good sub, and she, in many respects, in terms of what she offers sometimes from that side, is something that not all players show. And she shows a real good attitude to be in the sub. She doesn't want to be, of course, but when she is, she's a real sort of motivator on the sideline, and, you know, and is really kind of supportive of her teammates, which again is what you need during a tournament. And then of course Tony, well, I think Tony will have opportunities during the tournament. I can't think that she won't not come on at some stage. And I think then Tony just needs to obviously show her good qualities that she's done both at England junior level and obviously with ourselves recently. And if she shows those qualities, then, you know, I'm sure she'll have her opportunities.
We'll talk more to Andy in a little while, but first, as part of the coverage of the tournament, Jackie Oatley will be fronting the BBC's team, and here she is giving her assessment of the expectations around the England side.
So I'm joined by Jackie Oatley, one of the faces that you will see quite often over the summer as she is anchoring the BBC's Euro 2013 coverage. Jackie, thanks for joining us on the Women's Football Podcast. You've spent a bit of time with the England squad up at St George's Park. What's the vibe been like? What's the atmosphere been like within the squad?
Very positive, very professional. They were, I think, pretty relieved to have been selected, the ones that I saw, because I saw them at the squad launch and saw them up at St George's Park as well a couple of times. And yeah, I think they were very much looking forward to getting on that plane to Sweden and showing what they can do. And let's hope that that they bring home the goods.
So do you think there's an added pressure with the team having obviously reached the final in 2009? There is only one step further that they can go, and that is to actually win the whole tournament.
Well, technically, that is true, isn't it? But of course, I mean, there are some pretty good teams in there, and England are ranked fourth out of the teams at the tournament. The Germans, the French will be pretty hard to beat. And then, of course, there's a host nation, Sweden. So I think the pressure, if you can call it pressure, is on those three. I think the pressure on England will be really to get out of the group, as I hope, and the players consistently talking about is the first game, second game, third game, get out the group. That's the absolute bare minimum requirement. I think pretty much everybody would agree. And then the quarterfinals, I think with the men's team as well, everybody has a mindset of quarterfinals tends to be level par. Anything better than that would be a bonus. But I think from what Hope Howell was saying, semi-final seems to be the not so much the target, but I get the impression that if they were to reach the semi-finals and maybe only fell heroically to somebody higher ranked than them, then that's perfectly okay. So you don't really want to think about ways that they'll go out, but you just really want them to perform to their potential. That's the key thing, isn't it? You just want them to go out there and show what they can do, just as they did at times last summer, particularly against Brazil, play some good football and win some games. And I think from our point of view at the BBC, we're pretty keen for England to get out the group at least, because it's a real showcase for them, an opportunity for people to see just how good they can be.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you look at the group, we know about the French. They've played them a few times, a couple of draws in the last few games. We don't know an awful lot about the Spanish other than the fact that they beat Scotland in a playoff to reach the tournament, and the Russians, obviously, England beat in the group stages in the last European Championship. So it's going to be tough, but we're confident that they're going to get through.
Yeah, definitely confident. I mean, I think if they were to finish above the French in the group, that would be a wonderful achievement. But I don't think too many people are expecting them to do that. I think it would be a bonus if they did. But certainly it would be a disappointment to finish below Spain or Russia, seen as still emerging nations, really, in the world of women's football, and certainly ranked a lot lower than England. And yeah, frankly, whether they beat them or not is another matter, but certainly they should finish ahead of Spain or Russia, and let's hope they do.
Hope Howell announced her squad recently. A few surprises in there, names like Lucy Bronze, Gemma Bonner, omission of Rachel Williams. What was your view when the squad was announced? Any surprise names in there for you, or surprise omissions?
Not really. A lot of people are talking about Natasha Dowie and Gemma Davison being fantastic performers in the WSL, and there were a few scratched heads as to why they weren't in there. I have asked Hope why not, and she was keen to point out that she didn't want to go into detail and that there were good reasons why she didn't pick them. So she obviously has her reasons. In terms of Rachel Williams, it was a little bit surprising, but then who would you leave out for her? When she's been in squads previously, she hasn't always been utilised a great deal. I think the theory is that somebody like Tony Duggan is an excellent goal scorer, and that she would score the goals. So maybe Rachel Williams was a little bit of a surprise. Gemma Bonner, surprised in the sense that she's uncapped, but not a surprise in terms of her ability. She is outstanding, and I know she's been described by her manager, I don't think I'm breaking any confidences by saying that her boss thinks that she's been the best defender in WSL so far this season. So hopefully she'll get some minutes against Sweden, get her first cap. But apparently, you know, the way she is in terms of her temperament, she should be able to handle it.
You've mentioned young players like Tony Duggan and Gemma Bonner. Who would, if you had to pick two players that you think will emerge from the England squad in this tournament, who would it be?
Two players, I think Jordan Nobbs and Tony Duggan. I said to Tony Duggan after the Japan game, I said, I've had this premonition that you're going to do well, you're going to get your chance, maybe off the bench, and you're going to score an important goal or two, and then you'll be possibly thrust into the limelight in the way that Steph Horton was last summer, and that you're going to end up on the Graham Norton show and have some real banter with him. I think she thought I just lost the plot. But I just could see that happening. Very good player, great personality, lovely girl, and sort of player you really want to see do well. And Jordan Nobbs, what a talent. 5'2", scored with a header in the cup final. So, yeah, I think she's somebody who could really emerge that maybe people haven't heard too much about before.
Okay. Final question. You have the privilege of anchoring the coverage. How excited are you for the tournament? I mean, you obviously keep a professional face on during the competition. We saw how excited you can be when Jake Humphrey stitched you up during the Olympics. Are we going to see another Jackie Oakley moment, jumping up and down in front of the camera?
Oh, so embarrassing. It's a lesson, isn't it, that if ever there's a camera and you think it's off and you're jumping up and down celebrating a goal, then just do it out of the shot. I really thought it switched off during games. But anyway, that was the Brazil match. But yeah, I can't wait. Honestly, I've been looking forward to this for so many months. Before I was asked to present it, I've just been looking forward to it. Anyway, it's a great opportunity. I'm really proud of the BBC for putting this whole tournament on, not just England games, but all the evening kickoffs as well and highlights of all the other games. It's just fantastic that we're showing it right from the start to give people an opportunity to really follow the players from early on, get to know the characters, because often with these events, you kind of start watching either in the quarterfinals or even, as last time, during the final. So really hope people get to know the players, hope they can do themselves justice, and hope we have a gloriously happy outcome at the end of it.
Well, I think we can all agree with that. Jackie, thank you very much for joining us on the Women's Football Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you on TV during the course of the competition.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
So that was Jackie Oakley, who will, of course, be all over the BBC coverage in the next few weeks. Andy, obviously, we talk about the women's game needing that little bit more coverage. How great is it to see that the BBC is covering the tournament in so much detail?
It's absolutely brilliant, to be honest. It's what the game has needed. Obviously, ESPN come on board and have been fantastic supporters of the women's game. But now, with obviously the BBC, it opens it up to so much more people. You know, obviously being free to air, if you like, it now gives sort of people in their homes the opportunity to watch online. Content is developing all the time. You know, a general interest and awareness is as high as it's ever been, and that's a great position to be in, certainly going into a tournament. And you know, the commitments the BBC have made in terms of, you know, putting games on live, red button games, BBC Two for the England games. You know, it's great that that platform has been chosen, and, you know, obviously none better, I suppose, than the BBC in terms of, as I say, opening up to the wider market, if you like. And, you know, it should be really exciting going forward. You know, this is the main thing is that we keep that continuity going, we keep that support going, because obviously there will be interest generated. You know, again, the BBC have done well in terms of WSL coverage before the tournament has begun, so obviously there's that interest has already been developed, and now it's then sustaining it after the tournament and ensuring it becomes just second nature, if you like, and continues, you know, for the next 5 years. That's what it, hopefully this will give it the platform to do.
Does that add a little bit of pressure, though? Because, you know, God forbid that we have this coverage and England fall short in the group stages. Would that actually be quite detrimental?
It could do, yeah. And I think it's a valid point that you make. You know, obviously, the more coverage you get, the more coverage you ask for, the bigger the expectation. And ultimately, it will come down to the players, the staff, everyone involved, to make sure that obviously we deliver. Now, as lots of countless tournaments beforehand, both men's and women's have shown, it's always a tough ask for England to do really well in tournaments. But if England have the same confidence and belief that they've had in the previous tournaments, then there's no reason why this shouldn't be a really good platform and really showcases the best of women's football. And also, even removing their sort of England supporters, scarf, cap, whatever you wear, I think it's just got to open up to, as I say, the general public, how good women's football is across Europe as well, and they're going to see some fantastic players over the next few weeks. So, yeah, it should be absolutely exciting times, but, as you say, they've got to deliver.
Jackie also mentioned that England should be aiming to get out of that group stage. Is that a realistic ambition?
I think so. The tournament, in terms of the group, is obviously the key bit for England, and I think Hope's gone on record in terms of saying they've got to focus on getting out the group. And, you know, the worry and the danger is, as a manager, is that potentially players start looking to maybe previous tournaments and go, well, we got to the final, so it's going to happen again. It doesn't work like that, and, you know, I'm sure that'll be a key message that the staff will be reminding the players is that, you know what, you've got big jobs to do, and treat each game individually with the maximum respect and make sure you come out the group. And, you know, I think 2009 England finished third place and come out as one of the best third place teams, and obviously almost slipped through the back door in that sense into the sort of quarterfinals. But if that's what it takes and that gets you to a final, then sometimes you'd accept that and you're happy with that. But I do think if they're going to show a real intent from the start of the tournament, they've certainly got to be aiming for those top two places and not be relying on, as I say, maybe a third place finish to get them through.
It's such an interesting group as well. You've got the established France, you've got a vastly improving nation in Spain, and then you've just got the complete and unknown quantity that is Russia.
Yeah, and that's probably what makes this group one of the most exciting groups to kind of watch and be part of, is because, as you say, you've got a real strong French team. The French team, for me, have always been one that have flattered to deceive to a certain degree. You know, they've always had hugely talented players, absolute, I'm talking top class world and, you know, European stars. Obviously at a club level, pretty much half of the French squad is playing for Lyon, so they've got a real strong team, but they've always, for me, not fully delivered in tournaments. Now this is a big tournament for them, so obviously straight away you've got, with it being the third group game for England, for me that should be the decider who finishes first and second in the group. And then obviously, as you say, Spain have obviously got a strong pedigree, although obviously I've seen England play them a few times in recent years and I do feel England are stronger than them. But again, it certainly won't be a team they can take lightly just because they have quality individuals who, you know, certainly can pop up with pieces of magic, score good goals. So England will certainly have to watch them. And as you say, Russia are the unknown, but Russia will be, based on little bits that I've seen of them and heard of them, that, you know, they're a well-organised team. So they'll certainly probably be in the mindset of, well, we're the rank outsiders of the group, so we've absolutely got nothing to lose. We'll contain and try and hit teams on the break. And I think that's probably how Russia will set up. And don't be surprised if they catch one or two of the teams in the group out because of that. And, you know, certainly that's where you definitely have to be on your game. And it might be goal difference. So certainly against Russia, from an England point of view, they have to make sure, first, they win the game, but secondly, that might be the difference between first and second place.
England have obviously gone into the last few major tournaments with Hope Powell in charge. Is having that continuity a strength?
I think so, of course. And we've spoken about the continuity of the players, but equally with the staff, having that experience. You know, someone like Hope now is, you know, managed, you know, at the very highest level of international football for so many years now. She'll have a real confidence going in, I'm sure, of herself and her staff. So that should then transmit itself to the players. So then you would like to think the combination of experienced players and experienced staff should then make for a real good team. So, yeah, I think having that continuity is going to really benefit England.
As Jackie also said, Hope has called up a couple of uncapped players. They're in defence. Is it a bit of a gamble to take uncapped players in such a crucial position?
Again, a valid one from you, in terms of it can be perceived as being a risk, but I think if you look at certainly the two individuals I think you're speaking about, you know, from Gemma Bonner's point of view, I can only say from watching the WSL game, she's been the outstanding defender in the league so far in the first half of the season. And a player who, even when she was at Chelsea, was a fantastic leader, if you like, has played, again, youth levels. So international football, although senior football is, again, different, it won't phase her in the sense of she's been there, she's played in tournaments, so she'll have that experience to draw upon. And as I say, she'll have the confidence of having a really strong first half of the season behind her. And then obviously Lucy Bronze, again, a player that I've been fortunate to work with. Again, Lucy's had lots of ups and downs in terms of injuries, but the one thing that's never changed during that time has been what people think of her in terms of her quality. And again, she'll probably approach the tournament with little fear, in the sense of she'll see this as a huge opportunity. So having such a big opportunity then hopefully transpires itself to then someone performing really well when called upon. And again, Lucy is one of those who can play full-back, she can play centre-half. In fact, if you probably stuck it up front, he'd still be a threat because of a pace. So, again, a super option for Hope to have. And neither of those players, as you say, will certainly cause any problems and will definitely benefit the squad.
Time for our second expert now. And Kieran managed to grab a few minutes with the host of the FA Women's Super League show, Lindsay Hooper. And here she is.
So we're joined by Lindsay Hooper, presenter of the FA Women's Super League show and also a presenter for our friends, the Offside Rule podcast. So give them a download if you get an opportunity. Lindsay, you obviously present the WSL show. You see a lot of English football. What did you make of Hope Powell's squad when she announced it recently?
I thought the squad was really quite reflective of the season. I mean, it's got lots of experience in there. You need that. You need the experienced players. So your likes of Kelly Smith, who's going again, what she brings to the squad, of course, is years and years of experience. I mean, she took a penalty kick with a left leg when she wasn't fully fit and still managed to be a big part of England's development that year. So I think it's important that there were the experienced players, your likes of Steph Horton's going off the back of such a brilliant summer last summer for Team GB. I think she will really rally not only the squad, but I think in terms of fans and support, it will have that interest because they'll think, well, is she going to score a few more again? I honestly think, you know, Casey Stoney is a brilliant captain. So it needed someone like her who's very vocal and can sort of instruct from the back of the field. But likewise, I think it needed that injection of youth. And I was so pleased to see Jordan Nobbs selected and Tony Duggan, who's had a brilliant first half of the season in the WSL. When you've got players like that who are rich in form, you like to think that the squad's progressing and is introducing more of those players. I mean, personally, I was slightly disappointed not to see Gemma Davison from Arsenal Ladies in there, because for me, out and out, she's been the best player I've watched in the WSL so far this year. But, you know, everyone can't be included. It's only a certain size squad, and I understand that. And there will be politics around that because certain positions are more heavily favoured than others. I mean, you know, Rachel Yankee, of course, you can't leave her out. She's such an informed player, is still, and is obviously going to break some and add to that record that she's already got now from Peter Shaw as the all-time most capped player for England. So I'm sure she'll get plenty more out there in Sweden. And that balance, and I think, you know, Hope's selection, you know, Gemma Bonner as well, you know, I just think everybody really offers something, and it's quite an exciting squad. And hopefully, fingers crossed, if everybody is fit, because we know there are a few little injury problems, then if they are all ironed out, then I think we really can go far.
Who do you think are potential game changers for some of the other nations that we should probably look out for?
Well, I watched the Women's Champions League final, and I mean, it has been, hasn't it, out and out, the year of German football. So not only did we have Champions League winners by Munich and an all-German Champions League men's final, but we had Wolfsburg in the Women's Champions League final. And they were a very strong side. Now, actually, Lyon probably played better on the night, but there were people like Nadine Kessler, who at the time, you know, I think she's playing with a broken wrist, just gritty, just those sorts of players that just don't give up. And the workhorses, the sort of players that England fans would just immediately take under their wing, because we love a workhorse, don't we? We love someone who's going to run the length of the pitch up and down and work tirelessly. And she was one of those players. And I think it's that sort of closing down defenders and really bossing the midfield that's going to make the difference out in Sweden. So she could be a key player, and I think Germany definitely ones to consider out there. I think they're going to do very well.
And just before we came on to the podcast, you also mentioned Sofia Jakobsen, someone we interviewed for the last podcast.
Well, Sofia Jakobsen, I can speak about a little bit more because I've watched her up close, and she has got a great understanding of the game, and she's someone I think, you know, you look for football brains. I mean, all these sort of cliches come out, I guess, but she is brilliant at reading the game. And when I've seen her on fire, she's been a pretty unplayable this season. I have seen her in a couple of poorer games as well, where she didn't quite come to the expectation level that I got for her. So I do wonder whether it's to do with the players around her, and of course settling into life in the WSL. But I think she's taken to it pretty smoothly, to be honest.
Well, we've mentioned a couple of players from other countries. We've looked at the England squad. But final question, we have to be confident, don't we? We've won the Cyprus Cup. We've beaten Canada since then. We've drawn with world champions Japan. It's going to be our year, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know what? I wholeheartedly stand by Claire Balding's comments that, it will be England women that win a major tournament before England men. Is it going to be the Euros this summer? I really hope so. I really do. I'll come back to an earlier point I made. Injury pending. I think yes. I think we'll be in that final. And can we go one better? I think maybe it is our year, you know. Off the back of the Olympics, it would be such a splendid thing to happen and such a great thing for the game. It would also bring in more audiences before this two-tier split in the WSL next season. And I could just really see the women's game benefiting from having a great tournament. Now, without putting pressure on the players' shoulders and sort of being a gauge of that from speaking to a lot of the players sort of behind the scenes, I don't think they're having that pressure. They seem really cool, calm, collected, and they seem just like they want to get out there and they want to play football. And I think once they've got that attitude, then really there's nothing stopping them winning the whole thing.
Couldn't agree more. Lindsay, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Women's Football Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you back anchoring the WSL show when it returns in August.
Thank you very much.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFPod.
So that was Lindsay Hooper, and she mentioned Sophia Jakobsen there, and obviously you've faced her a couple of times this season. What does she bring? How do you prepare for someone with so much pace?
I think you've got to be obviously aware of her qualities, and certainly in terms of the back four, she's a player who doesn't just stay in one position. So she's very much, and certainly the way Chelsea play, and Sweden to a certain degree, although I think they're a little bit more rigid in their setup with the Swedish team, she floats across that front three really well. So you can't say she's only ever a centre forward as a number nine, or you can't say she's ever a wide player, a number seven or 11. She actually does drift. And I suppose it's when she's drifting is potentially when she's at dangerous best, if you like, in terms of how we would have to set up against her. You can't give her much space in behind, because if you do invite that space in behind, then obviously someone with such pace will then exploit that, obviously, if she's given the right service. So you've initially got to obviously try and stop the service, but then certainly watching and tracking her runs is an important one, that the back four actually drop off as soon as it looks as though she's going to run in behind you, so you don't get caught in a foot race, because generally with someone like Sophia's pace there'll be one winner. But then equally, at times it's actually good to maintain almost like a medium line, if you like, so not drop off too deep, because that does invite pressure onto yourselves. Keep a medium line, and then obviously you're relying on your goalkeeper to be really proactive in behind in terms of any ball that does go over the top. Then you've got your keeper coming out and sweeping up for you. So from our point of view, that's how we kind of approached someone like Sophia and players with, you know, pace like her. I think you're relying on your back four to really take up good positions, assessing not only the run, but if there's any pressure on the ball initially, because if there isn't, then you're definitely going to have to drop and make sure you cover that space where she's going to run into.
Sophia obviously helped Sweden comfortably beat England 4-1 in that second warm-up game. Do you see them as one of the favourites?
Well, as being the hosts, you know, I think they should consider themselves one of the favourites. I think they're ranked fourth in the world. I think they're second in Europe. So straight away, just working off those stats alone, which I know sometimes is a bit dangerous, but working off those facts, then, you know, you're talking about a really strong team. I think in the game against England, you saw exactly what Sweden have always excelled in. You know, they went really high with the press. I think England were on the back foot. Again, they will feed off the crowd with them being the home nation. So even in that friendly, you could see the lift they got from the crowd when they really got at teams. So I think that will be something that, you know, obviously they will look to do. Obviously, they've got a new manager, it's not as if Pia needs much introduction. You know, certainly someone who any manager across the world, you know, certainly from myself, has always been fully aware of her achievements and, you know, what a fantastic, you know, career she's had as a, you know, both a player and a manager. And so she'll bring a winning mentality, which is obviously crucial to anyone. But, you know, she's obviously achieved a lot of success with America over recent years. So I think the impact of her as manager will have a huge effect for the Swedes. Obviously then, you know, in terms of other players within the group. Well, Shellen is one that obviously...
I was going to say, I'm going to set you a bit of a challenge here. Say something that no one else has ever said about Lotta Shellen.
Well, I'm probably going to fail that challenge. She's a world-class player. There's one already, straight away.
Nice cliche.
She's a world-class player. And she offers so much because, you know, she's scored 50-plus goals for the national team. She's a real leader of the team. Again, keep taking these off, by the way. You know, she's got... When we're talking about Sofia's movements, I think Shellen's movement's probably one of the best in world football, as I say, just because she pulls on people's shoulders and makes those clever runs. That centre-halves find it hard to track. So I'll stop there before I tick off any more clichés, but she's a top player, of course, and, you know, someone who will, again, home tournaments... Huge experience. I'm sure she's got huge personal ambitions as well as the team's ambitions.
I've got to say, in that friendly, Sweden not only showed good technical ability, but were not afraid to really add a lot of physicality to the game.
Oh, massively. And again, the Swedish teams from probably youth level right the way up to seniors are always renowned for being physical. But as you say, don't take away the fact that they are... technically a good side. They've got bags of pace in the right areas. You know, the centre-halves are real strong, you know, dominant centre-halves who, you know, no centre-forwards will like playing up against, which I think England found, you know, the other night. And so, across the board, I think Sweden have got a real solid group of players. Whether then, obviously, again, you've got to factor in injuries. So suddenly if you lose one or two of those stronger players, is then the squad strong enough to cope with it? Again, you've got to look at it and thinking back to 2005 when England hosted the tournament, the Euros, the expectation got to England. Again, you could look to recent World Cup, 2011, Germany hosted it, shock quarter-finalist, went out. You know, so again, you can use the home support to thrive off, but equally the home support can be a detriment and be something overpowering. So I think it will be finely balanced for Sweden how they ultimately, you know, come out of their group. I do expect them to win the group, but then in terms of quarterfinals, semi-finals, finals, well then it will be really interesting to see if they've got that strong state of mind to be able to cope with what would be then a real sense of excitement growing within their own country.
Another favourite must be Germany, and obviously they're on a massive high after Wolfsburg scooped the Champions League.
Yeah, you know, and again, definitely going to be cliche central with my discussion around Germany. You know, in terms of, well, it goes, you look at the facts, five sort of previous winners of the European Championships. You know, I think they've won six out of the last seven. So that shows you that they're the team to beat. Yes, Germany have come into the tournament with, you know, big injury doubts, concerns. Well, they've lost probably six players who were going to be in the squad who've had to come out, and, you know, obviously that's going to be a loss to them. But I think the young players that they've brought in will give them, you know, a real boost in terms of a freshness, and those players have been involved in younger youth tournaments. So again, like we said about the English girls bringing that experience, they'll still bring a lot of experience to the table, albeit at maybe youth level, but don't rule out the Germans for sure. And obviously the fact that they won the previous tournaments and just excel, and even their recent results against Japan, you know, I think they won 4-2, then they're certainly going to be the team to beat by far.
It's obviously the European Championships dominating the world of women's football, but there's plenty of other talking points around the world, and Kieran has picked out one or two that have caught his eye.
Hi guys, sorry I can't be there with you. Andy, thank you for stepping into my shoes. As you know, I am currently packing my bags to head out to Sweden to watch England in their three group games out in Linköping. I've been given a few minutes to run through some of the news making the headlines in the world of women's football. I've got a list as long as my arm, so I'm going to try and get through as much as I can. I think there's only one place to start, really, from an England perspective, and that is Rachel Yankee achieving her 126th cap to beat the all-time record for England internationals, which was previously held by England men's international Peter Shilton. Incredible achievement for Rachel, an inspiration to so many in the game, especially to young players in England. You look at the fact that she was dropped from Euro 2009 squad before the tournament, and she's really bounced back from that and become such a key player. And I think she's going to be a massive influence on this England team for Euro 2013. So congratulations to Rachel, and I'm sure that she will continue to accumulate even more caps. Obviously, England drew that game with Japan 1-1 before heading out to Sweden to take on the host nation in a friendly before the tournament kicks off. Sadly for Hope Powell's side, they were on the end of a 4-1 defeat, but there were some positives. Casey Stoney and Karen Carney both came back from long-term injuries. So what you read into the result, I'm not too sure, but being a friendly, hopefully it won't have too much of an influence on the tournament. But it wasn't just England who had a surprise defeat. The French, who obviously are Group C rivals for England, lost at home to Australia in a 2-0 defeat in France recently. Despite France having the majority of the play and the chances, it was the Australians that came out on top, and it should make it very interesting when England and France meet in their final Group C game. We now move on to our European club roundup, and in Sweden, Tyresö currently lead the way on 27 points from 11 games, 3 points ahead of Malmo. Kristen Press, the in-form player in the league with 12 goals in 11 games. But also worth noting, Jodie Taylor, who we obviously interviewed in our last podcast, currently sits just a couple behind her with 10 goals. And just quickly moving over to Iceland, we've been keeping tabs on Ashley Hinks, our English girl, formerly of Chelsea. And Ashley's doing pretty well out there. She's scored 6 goals for her club FH, but they need to pick up some more points as they currently sit 7th in the league. We'll finish off our European roundup by telling you about some players that have moved clubs in the last few weeks. And Lyon have certainly been one of the busier clubs in Europe, signing Japan international Saki Kumagai. Although no official announcement from the club, there is a photo of Kumagai posing with her shirt with the Lyon coach, so we wish her well. Lyon have also released their two existing Japan internationals, Shinobu Ono and Ami Itaki, who have both left the club, as have French internationals Céline Deville and Laura Georges. Deville has joined fellow French team Juvisy, while Georges has also joined a fellow French team in the form of Paris Saint-Germain. Also joining PSG is French international Marie-Laure Dully. So certainly PSG putting their intentions out there early with some quality signings early doors. And just to finish off, Chelsea ladies in England have released Alina Vidarsdottir and Edda Gardarsdottir, the Icelandic duo, but have had a real coup in announcing that they have signed former Turbine Potsdam striker and Japan international Yuki Ajimi. I'm going to finish up shortly and introduce Emily Delhunty, our American correspondent, but there are a couple of things I would like to mention that have occurred in the United States. First off, the impact of Megan Rapinoe and Hope Solo on their club Seattle Reign, a club that was really struggling with 9 defeats in a row, but certainly the two players have come in and had a real impact with the Reign picking up a couple of wins and a couple of draws. While it's probably too late for them to push for a playoff place, they certainly do look more comfortable with those internationals back in the side. A couple of interesting trades that have taken place. Rene Cuellar and Teresa Noyola, both Mexican internationals, have swapped clubs. Cuellar coming over to Seattle Reign and Noyola going over to FC Kansas City. Really interesting trade, that one. Cuellar had 5 goals for FCKC and looked really comfortable over there, but for some reason the two sides have been able to make that trade. Also a couple of other trades as well. Adriana Leon and Carmelina Moscato, both Canadian internationals, have swapped clubs. Leon has gone over to Chicago Red Stars, while Moscato has come over to the Boston Breakers. So certainly some interesting moves there. Just one other notable one, Tiffany Cameron, Canadian international, was released by Seattle Reign and has joined FC Casey. So there's your movements and small roundup from me on the NWSL. I can't finish this roundup off without mentioning Abby Wambach, who of course went past Mia Hamm's all-time international goalscoring record when the US women's national team beat the Korean Republic 5-0. Abby went into the game on the 20th of June needing 2 goals to equal Mia's record, and by the time the referee had blown the half-time whistle, Abby had bagged 4 goals and had moved on to 160. An unbelievable achievement by an absolutely incredible player who has terrorised defenders for so many years. And what's scary is that at 33, Abby has probably still got a couple more years left in her, and Lord knows what she is going to go on and achieve. 160 goals in 207 caps is an incredible achievement, and I think we can all agree that she will go down as a legend of the game. So that's enough from me. I'm now going to move on, and I'm going to pass you over to Emily Delhunty with her monthly roundup of what's been going on in the NWSL.
Hey guys, I'll start with the biggest news since the last time we talked. There's new management in Washington. Mike Jordan coached the Spirit in their first 11 games to only 6 points, and after a very poor showing in a 4-0 loss against Western New York last week, he was fired. reserves coach Mark Parsons has replaced him, and there was a tiny glimmer of hope last week when they tied Kansas City, but the fact is they're still unable to score, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon. Lauren Cheney is absolutely having a great season for Kansas City. She has 8 goals so far, playing as a midfielder. But so much more than the goals, her, along with one of the other league's best, Desiree Scott, just command the midfield for their team. It's so fun to watch how Cheney can just turn with her back to goal and shoot. She's one of the best in the world at that. She missed her last 2 games to get married, but is expected to be back for their next game on Sunday. There's kind of a momentum swing going on in the Northwest. Portland is starting to really struggle. Their midfield is just non-existent at times, and there's just not a link between them and the forwards. And it really says a lot that both Alex Morgan and Christine Sinclair, who we all know are 2 of the best strikers in the world, haven't scored for 3 full games. There's a problem. Seattle, on the other hand, is really looking up. Megan Rapinoe's now with the team, and her spark has definitely helped them. But they just have overall been playing better, more solid soccer in the past few weeks. It just looks like it's extremely unlikely for them to make the playoffs. The good soccer just came too late. Sky Blue is sitting in first right now. They've been missing a few players for the past few games, with Sophie Schmidt getting a red card and their Australians missing 2 games for international duty. But they should be back to full strength this week. The most interesting thing through the rest of the season will be who gets that 4th place, that final playoff spot. Western New York has it now, but after a bit of a slump, Boston's catching up. Sid LaRue has the most goals in the league right now with 10, and Boston's new defensive acquisitions have them in a good spot. Chicago is a little bit off from the 4th place, but they've played well recently. Can Portland lose enough points to get them out of the top 4? It's entirely possible. There's just 7 points separating Portland in 2nd and Boston in 5th. That's how close the top of the table is. All in all, we're in for a great second half. The league is really showing the equality of the teams. Anyone can beat anyone on a given day, regardless of what has happened in the past. There are no huge beatings here, which is making it wildly entertaining to watch.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Get involved via Facebook.
Facebook.com/WFPod.
Well, thank you to Kieran and Emily there. Andy, you've been watching a few games in the NWSL. What have you made of it?
I think, you know, it's the American League has always traditionally being a league that's probably been the strongest, and obviously they've had a few difficulties in recent years in terms of the sustainability of it, but certainly just looking at the games that I've managed to catch so far, you know, the standard is really high, and you know, a very competitive league. And I think certainly, obviously, you look at certain teams, and obviously with Laura Harvey going out to Seattle Reign and Jess Fishlock, obviously 2 people who are well known in the Women's Super League, obviously have kept a closer eye on Seattle, and you know, they've had a tough start, but if you look at the games, they haven't played like a team who are bottom of the league. You know, they've played like a team who are really competitive and have now got all the players, importantly, you know, available to them, and you know, obviously adjusting to life, if you like, as being a new team, because essentially that's what all of the teams are. So, you know, that's a tough ask for anyone. And, you know, obviously it's good to see them now picking up a few points. You know, they've had a win recently, and, you know, it shows what level, you know, the standard of football is out there. But equally, I kind of still, obviously, naturally will compare it to the WSL, and I'm like, I don't think there's huge amounts of differences. You know, yes, you can see certain aspects that, you know, I think the girls out there, pretty much all of those teams train full time, so you can see from that point of view, you know, differences. However, I do think that gap where it used to be a huge one isn't as big as it once was. And, you know, certainly I think, you know, the WSL is in a position to put itself up against the American League and not be kind of ashamed of doing that. Although you can see there's some of the top American and Canadian players, obviously, operating in that league, and you know, the standard of football is really high.
But it's time to go back to our final expert ahead of the European Championships, and that is the editor of She Kicks magazine, Jen O'Neill. Jen is relishing the chance to watch a number of exciting youngsters, and here she is again talking to Kieran.
Okay, so I'm joined by Jen O'Neill from the popular women's magazine She Kicks, and Jen will be out in Sweden covering the European Championships. Jen, we've just actually seen England lose 4-1 in a friendly to Sweden. how much of a dent do you think that will be, and do you think Hope Power will now have some questions to answer?
Well, I think it's a friendly, and it's Sweden, other host nations. There was quite a lot of pressure on them, wasn't there? And it was to put on a show. Whereas for England, it was to get some of the players who haven't had a lot of match playing time recently, who've had injuries, to get them out and playing. So 4-1, it was a pretty poor performance, really. That's the thing, the results, not key, but the performance you want to be decent. And there's a few areas where it was the defence particularly looking a little haphazard. It was just generally disjointed all over the field, but the positives are that you saw Casey Stoney play for half, saw Steph Houghton play. Tony Duggan looked really bright when she came on, and Kaz Carney as well, who's somebody who hasn't played since the Cyprus Cup. She looked really sharp, she looked good. There's little things like that you have to sort of search around for those positives. But it's looking at results England have had before tournaments in the past, you go in and you think, you know, like the US win before the World Cup at Leighton Orient, I thought we were going to win the World Cup. So it was on such a high, because it was such an amazing game. I bowed down to Rachel Yankee on the stairs after she'd scored that amazing goal. They beat Sweden 2-0 not long after. They went before they headed off to Germany. So we went there on a real high and then didn't quite do as much as you expected in the tournament. So you can read a bit too much into it. I think they've got enough time to pick themselves up. I wouldn't get too worried. Maybe it's a bit of an eye-opener. Maybe it's a good thing in a way that it's lowered people's expectations slightly and they know they've got a lot of work to do. And the other thing is Sweden, probably one of the favourites for the tournament. England, one of the outside favourites.
Do you think that there might be concerns over the amount of time the injured players have got to actually get to full fitness? You mentioned Casey, you mentioned Kaz Carney. Kelly Smith hasn't kicked a ball in months. Should we be concerned that those players might not be ready for the start of the tournament?
I think there's always a bit of concern, isn't there? They're key players, and that's why they were included, and that's why Hope Powell, she's shown her trust in those players, and she's given them as much support and as much time as possible. And her and her staff have obviously looked at it and thought, well, we've got quite a lot of versatile players in the background who can fit in if there's a problem with those girls, but they want them there. Kelly Smith is one of the greatest players in the world, you know, an inspiration, best player of her generation, certainly in England. If she only plays in the quarterfinal, then it would be worth taking her. Because she's that good, because she could turn the game, she could come on for half a game and win it. So to have her, the opposition are worried in case she's going to come on. So you take her because of who she is and what she's done and the ability she's got.
No, absolutely. And I think we discussed that in our last podcast and I said pretty much the same thing. We said Kelly Smith has that aura on the pitch and sort of instills fear into opposition defenders. If you were to look at other nations who have got players like Kelly Smith, which nations would they be in, and what players do you think are the ones that maybe will stand out in the tournament?
Well, I could go on a huge, long-winded.
Well, how about picking like a top three? Who are three players?
Well, that's going to be difficult. I'll run through a couple of the players that people mightn't have heard of, and they're going to enjoy watching. They've probably heard of Barbie, the German striker. She's going to score goals. She's got 17 in the qualifiers. She's a goal machine. Annie Mittag is back into form from playing in Malmo. Jennifer Marazan is such a talented player. These are Germans that, you know, we go, they've
quality,
lost,
yeah,
players to injury, but they're still going to be some of the best players on show. Pernilla Harder, the Danish girl, and Katrina Veya, they're both talented players, young, exciting to watch. And Ada Hegerberg and Caroline Hansen from Norway, they're quality. They're only, 18, 19? Actually, younger than that, sorry. And on the ball, they're just superb. Hegerberg has got an eye for goal like you haven't seen, and Hansen can put the frights up anybody. I've seen her run at Japan in the Algarve Cup, and they were scattered all over the place. They didn't know what to do because she was just so direct and so skillful on the ball. They're teams that England won't come up against initially. The team they play first has three outstanding players as well. That's Spain, and that's Veronica Boquete, who plays a football in Tirso. Her teammate in Tirso, Jenny Herboso, another beautiful player to watch. Great skill and poise. And Sonia Bermudez is a wide player who is so quick that she really, really put the fights up. The Scottish, when they knocked them out in the playoffs. So they've got these quality, fabulous players that you worry a little bit about. If England don't sort their defence out, then they might struggle a little bit in that opening match. And they've had trouble in opening matches in previous tournaments.
Do you think it could be the youngsters that are going to be the ones that stand up? You've already mentioned a few there. There seem to be a lot of young players coming through for their nations that are really starting to make an impact. And England obviously have their own in the likes of Tony Duggan and Jordan Nobbs.
Yeah, well, when you get the chance to see these girls play in UEFA Under-19 Championships and World Under-20 Championships, most of the German team have won the World Under-20 Championships at some stage. They're that good. So you get to see these players sort of break. So that's the exciting thing about tournaments like this. I've mentioned some names. I've got more written down that I could, you know, wang on about, but it is the young players that you might not have heard of, that Leonie Meyer, for example, fullback for Germany, 8 caps. Already people are talking about her being one of the best fullbacks in the women's game. It's stuff like that makes tournaments like this so exciting to watch.
Yeah, it brings youngsters to the forefront and potentially makes them stars. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You've mentioned Spain. We all know about the quality that France have got. Can you tell us a bit about the Russians?
Well, they won the Euro Under-19s back in 2005 in Hungary. And quite a lot of the team are made up, well, the current team are made up of players that graduated from that. They've got a girl who plays up front who, I've asked a few people for the magazine, who their players' standout would be. And Anna Signor, the Scottish manager, said that the Russian forward, a young Russian forward, was somebody to watch out for. I can't pronounce her name, begins with a P. But if you check that out, then you'll be able to read all about her. They've got a really good blend. They've got a new coach. He's only just taken over after the playoff win against Austria. They've got Elena Fomina, who played over 100 times for the national team as their assistant. So they've got that continuity, because you always worry about teams like that, who they have an old guy and then a group of young girls, and it's sort of a weird, I'm going to sound dodgy here, but it's sort of a weird relationship in that you've got this, they're frightened, they just don't feel comfortable. That's what you get sometimes when they're playing well, everything, you know, it's going well for them, and then when it's not going well for them, they shrink. And I think that they've got a much better setup in that respect now. I think they're a little bit happier about how they're performing. Their build-up hasn't been fantastic. They played against Ukraine, won easily. Then they played Wales Under-19s in Moscow the other day, won 6-0. It's not brilliant preparation in my eyes for coming into a tournament and playing against Spain and France and England. And they're saying they're not going to be the whipping girls on the field, but I think if you look at the tournament, they probably are going to be. They're probably one of the weakest sides in the whole tournament.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Jen, on the Women's Football Podcast. I would recommend that anyone who hasn't read She Kicks magazine before should get onto shekicks.net and order the latest issue, which has a preview of Euro 2013, and it also has a nice pull-out with all the fixtures on it, so there will be no excuse for missing any of the games. Thanks very much, Jen.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
So that was Jen O'Neill there, making the point that a lot of nations are bringing through young talent. Andy, would you say that the aftermath of this tournament, perhaps England might follow suit?
Yeah, I think you can see the early signs of that with this current squad who are going to be playing. You know, there's been 4 or 5 young players have been integrated into that squad recently. And, you know, I think that's, you know, like anything, it's a sign of the times in terms of, you know, for some of the more established players who've been within the England setup for probably coming up to 10, 11, 12 years. You know, it is the natural cycle of things. We'll say that the young ones are now going to have to take up and step up to the mantle and kind of be that leading force, if you like, in the players that we'll all probably talk about for the next 10 years. So, you know, that's a natural cycle. It's not to say it will happen instantly in terms of a huge call at one go. I think there'll be a phasing out of players because you don't want to just remove experience instantly, because that experience is what you need. But equally, I do think this tournament will herald, you know, more of the young players, because the under 23 squad England have got, there's some real good players in that group. Under 19s, there's some real good players in that group. So I think, yes, we will start to see, you know, the development of those young players into the senior team and those players now becoming, as I say, the go-to players.
You've mentioned the under-23s and the under-19s there. Who are the players who perhaps could form that next generation?
I think you've got some obviously already within the group. You know, I don't think we've touched on the likes of you know, Jordan Nobbs, who for me is one of the brightest midfielders, you know, that I've seen play, and certainly at such a young age, he's a really good player who offers a lot of threat going forward, but equally is prepared to work hard and defend properly. Obviously, you've got Tony Duggan, who's going to be, you know, certainly a big threat from a forward position for England. And then obviously we spoke about Gemma Bonner, Lucy Bronze. So you've got those group of players. But then, you know, as I say, within the 23s, you know, you've got the sort of next batch of players who will want to push on. I think it's probably unfair of me to start picking out individual players, because I'm not certainly going to try and do Hope's job or anyone else's job. But there are a good core of players there who I know for sure will be really knocking on the door and wanting to make that breakthrough over the next, you know, season or so post this tournament.
You've also got players who you know, didn't even get in the squad this time around, the likes of Tash Dowie, Gemma Davison, Jenny Flaherty. So we have the talent there.
Yeah, and that's the crucial bit, is the pool of players that England are able to select from now is as big as it's ever been. And as you say, the three players that you mentioned there will probably all in their own right be disappointed not to be part of the squad, and that just shows, as you say, the depth of quality, and it must be massively exciting for going forward in terms of what the squad will look like in the next 5-year cycle, if you like. And I think it's going to be a real strong squad who will form and hopefully continue the good work that the senior players have done over the last 10 years.
So just finally, Ali, with the momentum from all the recent success that women's football in this country has had, surely England can do well this tournament?
Well, they've done well last tournament as well, you know, the last Euros and the World Cup, obviously quarter-finals. So, yeah, you know, I think everyone wants to see an England team do well. Everyone wants to see an England team win. And that's, you know, that's the million-dollar question, is whether they can actually see it through and actually finally get the win that, you know, lots of people are putting lots of work and effort into, striving towards. And, you know, obviously, I think the quality's there. They need a bit of luck, because every team who wins a tournament gets some luck along the way. And if we get that combination of the good quality and that bit of luck, then hopefully we'll be, you know, celebrating an England victory at last.
Well, that's all we have time for. My thanks to Lindsay, Jackie, Jen, and of course Andy. Enjoy it.
Yeah, brilliant. I think Keir's has lost the job now, so unlucky, mate. It's now going to be renamed the Andy Spence and Hamish Show.
So for myself and Andy, enjoy the Euros and come on, England.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.